questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
So, welcome to Dads on the Air, coming to you on the Community Radio Network around Australia. We hope to bring you some informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of experts and interesting people on talking on the topics of fatherhood and masculinity. We talk to authors, academics, politicians and other professionals from Australia and around the world about issues affecting dads and boys. Now, our guest this morning is the ideal person to be talking about these issues. Our guest is Dr. Tim Hawkes, who has recently written a book called 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son. Dr. Hawkes is the author of several books. He is a fellow of the Australian College of Education, fellow of the Australian Council for Educational Administration. He's a frequent speaker at educational conferences around the world. He is, in fact, the headmaster and has been since 1998 of the King's School in Sydney, the oldest independent school in Australia. And in 2014, he was awarded an OAM for service to education and to professional organisations. Tim Hawkes, good morning.
G'day, Bill. It's lovely to be with you.
Thank you very much for being there. And after that glittering...
I was listening to that, Bill. I can hardly wait to hear what I have to say now. Thank you very much for that very generous introduction.
Well, I was intrigued in reading the book because you start off by... with your motive, and what is your motive for writing the book? And you describe yourself as a failure as a father, your betrayal as a headmaster, and inadequacy as a son. So I was quite intrigued by that.
Yes, this sort of book was written almost as a sort of act of repentance, really. I think the trouble, Bill, with so many of us dads is that we're so busy trying to be somebody outside of the home that we often forget to be somebody inside of the home. And for us dads, we often try and express our love by providing, you know, of course I love you, don't I, you know, pay for your education, boy, you know, this sort of stuff. And whereas, in fact, I think the most significant currency that our children understand, and indeed our wives, is the currency of time.
Yes.
And so, our boys would far rather see a sermon about love and to get the affirmation that their father wants to remain engaged in their lives by there being visual evidence rather than it being something which is verbalized once a year at a birthday party.
Yes, and it's not easy, is it? Because sometimes the children, and in particular we hear about boys, there might be a grunt rather than actual involvement.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, at around about the age of 14, you know, teenage boys tend to lose the power of speech. They take on a Neanderthal grunt. You know, their hitherto perfect face takes on the acne-even cratered appearance of the moon, and the whole world sucks. And this, of course, doesn't make them ideal conversation partners. But I think it has ever been thus. There is a 600% increase in testosterone levels between the ages of 10 and 14. 600%. Now, you know, testosterone is an anabolic steroid. It gives people roid rage. It turns hitherto genteel people into monster tractor throwers, and makes them very ornery. And of course, one of the things that we have to do is to teach our sons to understand their own bodies, for them to recognise that with this anabolic steroid surging through their veins, that this is going to lead them to often have a shorter fuse, to engage in fight-flight behaviours, and we've got to give them mechanisms and tricks as to how to handle that so they don't make a mess of their lives.
Yes, well, in your book, you've listed the 10 conversations and you speak generally about how to get involved with your children. Do you think there's a tendency at the moment for parents to be afraid to parent?
Well, that's a very good point. And one of the things that I sort of have observed, really, is that, you know, I think on average, the average 16-year-old or something like that has something like 350 Facebook friends or something ridiculous like that. And I try and tell my parents, certainly here at the King's School, that their sons don't need two extra to be added to their Facebook friend page. They've already got 350,
yes.
But they've only got two parents. And I think we can often be so intent and wanting to be our children's best friends that we can forget to be our children's best parents. Now, that, of course, doesn't mean that they can't be friends with their children, and I really hope that they are. But I think parents are more than just friends. We are mentors and guides, and we also have a worrying number of words in our lectionary, words like no and others like that, which our children need to hear from time to time. And so, yes, I certainly would totally agree that we need to make sure that that our parents' parents, and of course, may I just say, one of the other big things that is happening these days is that so many parents are fostering out their children, and they're fostering out their children to be mentored and raised by social networking sites, by Time Warner and Hollywood in front of televisions, and indeed by their children's peers. And this fostering out is often yielding a very, very bitter reward. And, you know, I sometimes have parents come into me and here at the King's School and say, well, you know, I don't know where he learned this. He didn't learn it for us at home.
Yes.
And you know, the reality is that's probably true. They didn't learn it from the parents, but they learned it certainly from the home. They learned it certainly from the fact that their son is spending, you know, anything up to 4 or 5 hours a day being mentored by people other than the parents. And the parents, us as parents, we need to wake up to this and say, for goodness sake, you know, what values is it that my son is picking up, my daughter is picking up, and am I indeed the principal source of these values, or indeed have I abrogated that responsibility in a manner which can only be described as irresponsible, and do I therefore need to make some adjustments? It is a challenge.
Well, and there are challenges, and clearly we're falling down in some areas. I mean, it's very timely that your book comes out at a time when young children seem to be being seduced into groups like ISIS at an extreme level. But do you see the conversations as the way out for the primary thing that parents should use to get more involved with their children?
Yes, I use the term conversation in a very general sense. I think some of the best conversations are actually wordless. Absolutely wordless conversations. I mean, we talked about love a little bit earlier, and I know here at the King's School, of course, we not only have 1,100 or 1,200 boarders, but we have about day boys, but we have about 350 boarders. And I love it when I'm outside of a boarding house and I see this youth that's sort of driven into Sydney from Dubbo or something like that, and it's covered in a red lateritic dust, and there's a half moon swirls on the windscreen, you know, of smeared insects, gizzards, you know, it's an entomological graveyard, this thing comes shuddering to a halt outside the boarding house, and there's the boy been waiting with his mates, and of course they're giving him a nudge in the ribs, the parents have arrived, and the mother gets out, and oh darling, you know, that gets him another nudge in the ribs from his mates. The father sort of unfolds himself out and stretches after the 5-hour journey, and that boy, without a word having been spoken, knows that he is loved. And the evidence is in a 5-hour journey, a $160 diesel bill.
Yes.
And you know, they've come here to watch him play footy on the weekend here at King's, and he knows he's not that good a player. And so when we talk about conversations, so much of the conversations that we should have with our son certainly need to be verbal, but many of them are in fact the best ways of getting truths and across is by listening, and is indeed by wordless demonstration.
Yes,
but you're right. We do need to have those conversations, and in 10 conversations you must have with your son, I give a number of hints as to how these conversations can be engineered. Yeah.
Yes, and I think the first of those 10 conversations that you list is the telling your son that he is loved. So that's all part of that non-verbal communication, I guess.
Well, that certainly is true, and the world can be a cruel place. It's sort of red in tooth and claw, and you get all these put downs and freeze outs and paybacks and so on and so forth. And in this world swamp where you get all this negativity going around, our sons, as indeed our daughters, they need a few firm islands, firm places where they can go to retreat and know with absolute certainty that they are loved. And we often, particularly as dads, We often try, as I said, to show our love, often sometimes by correcting our children, particularly our sons, you know, just wait till your father gets home. And I call these sort of blue pencil dads. These are dads that edit the lives of their sons. And I think we sometimes need to lift our game a bit and do a little bit more than just, you know, give our sons a sort of like a sort of a mental or an actual score out of 10 every day. And the other way, of course, we sometimes show our love is by providing. And we go out and hunt the mammoth and drag it to the cave. And, you know, that shouldn't be trivialized. Neither of those two tasks should be trivialized. They're both important. But I think the demonstration of our love, it sometimes does need to be, it needs to be spent in having time with our sons. And that sometimes can be difficult because you get a dad who arrives, you know, I don't know, on the 6:31, you know, at Epping in the evening, and his love, peace, and goodwill has evaporated halfway through the day, and he hasn't got much in the way of mental or emotional reserves to then take on an adolescent boy and their needs. But we actually do need to do that, and to give our sons that priority, lest, as I say, they are effectively mentored and brought up by sources other than the parents.
Yes, and here at Dads on the Air, we're speaking with Dr. Tim Hawkes, who is the author of 10 Conversations You Must Have with Your Son. We're going to have a short musical break now. I think it's an appropriate song. I hope Dr. Hawkes agrees with me. It's a song called I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner.
I wanna
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, where our special guest today is Dr. Tim Hawkes, the author of 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son. Now, Tim, we've talked about the first of the 10 conversations. That's the important aspect of telling your son that he is loved. You've directed all this at boy children, and we recognise how important it is, and that's the reason for this radio program, in fact. But what especially drew you to providing this guidance for boys in our community?
Well, I think as an educator, as headmaster here at the King's School in Parramatta, and also as a father in my own right, I was coming across far too much evidence of underparenting. And it was interesting. I'd often mention the word mother, you know, to my boys, or indeed to young men that I would meet just in life. And a wonderful smile would usually spread across their face, a beatific smile in memory of countless undeserved favours that they would get from their mothers. I would mention the word father to my boys, or to some of my boys, and indeed to young men. And all too often, I would see just a little bit of pain in the eyes, pain born of an inadequate relationship or a strained relationship. And I grieved over that. And I wanted, I guess, both as an educator and as an author, to try and do something about it. And hence my authorship of 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son. The other thing that I wanted to do was to encourage parents, particularly dads, and to remind them that they have a compendium of knowledge and wisdom which has been accumulating over the years. They've blown out many candles on many birthday cakes, and with that, you know, they have gained the experience about the world and its cruel edges, and they therefore have a tremendous amount of insight, and that knowledge and that insight should never be underestimated. And I just want to encourage mums and dads to say, look, you know a great deal, and your children need to have that wisdom passed on to them. Never try and downplay or trivialise that which you have learnt in life. Pass that on. Create those moments where you're in conversation with your children, and pass on that wisdom, because it's absolutely pure gold.
Yes, and what I like about your book in particular is that it's very practical. And for parents that say, I don't know how to talk to my son, you know, we'll sit there in silence, or I never know whether I'm treading on toes or what I should be saying. But one of the suggestions you make is that you actually send a positive letter to your son. And I thought, well, that for some parents who find it easier to write rather than speak, that might be a good approach.
Well, that's absolutely right. It's interesting. You know, I challenge parents, and I sort of say, if there was just one letter, you're only allowed to write one letter to your son, or indeed your daughter, why not? What would you write? And of course, so many for many parents, this is a hypothetical exercise. And my challenge is look, don't leave this thing till the 11th hour, because sometimes our children are snatched away from us on the 10th hour. Why don't you write it now? And say, you know, the things that you want to say. Probably that you love them, that you just feel so blessed in having them in your life, and then whatever it is that you want to say, and to write that letter. I think so much can be done with a written word, and one of the great advantages of the written word, it gives a permanent record of that expression of love by a parent that has been poured forth in written form.
Yes, and I also like the section where you talked about values, because I think that's missing a lot today, that if you can impress that idea of values and of leadership, it's going to be very helpful for the children.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. And I think, again, I was talking about this world swamp and the lack of sort of firm islands. I think, you know, with... there is a real genuine moral ambiguity out there. I had one little boy in my study, and you know, it's generally not good news when a boy is in the headmaster's study, you know, and my shadow is falling across him. And I said, well, you know, young man, you know, what do you know why you're here in my study? And he looked at me and said, oh, yes, sir, I so know why I'm here. And I said, well, why are you here? And he said, because I got caught. And I think, oh, golly, the sin of the age, of course, is being caught, not that you're doing something immoral or amoral or wrong. And so, look, there is a real moral ambiguity out there. I think that sometimes it can be linked to many things. Parenting, perhaps. I think the fact that so often the moral tone of our countries in the Western world is now not being set by governments, but it's been left to media, social networking sites. The fact that, quite frankly, governments have been absolutely impotent in controlling things like the ready access to porn sites and this raunch culture. Our governments have been pathetically, may I say, pathetic in their response, and pathetically underactive and inactive in being able to do something about this. And we're rearing a whole generation now of young men in a pornified culture, and I think that that's potentially going to lead to a very bitter harvest. And so we need some antidotes to this. We need some places where there is wholesomeness and good values. And one of the challenges I put there in my book, 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son, is, look, you know, if you were given the invitation to write 10 commandments, what would your 10 commandments be? And why don't you articulate them as a family? Why don't you work them out? And why don't you, you know, write them up and pin them up and saying, you know, it's a bit like, as, you know, as for when you choose this day which God you will follow, as for me and my family, we'll serve the Lord. Well, what do you want your family to be renowned for? What are the driving principles that are going to govern decision making and behaviour in your household? And I guess in 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son, I try and encourage parents to do this.
Yes, and we're speaking with Dr. Tim Hawkes, who is the author of this book we've been talking about, 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son. I must say, you give interesting examples throughout the book, and I was often thinking of the Beatles song She's Leaving Home, where it says, where they say, fun is the one thing that money can't buy, and something inside that was always denied.
Yes.
But on this occasion, you've selected a song. I wonder if you could tell us why you picked this particular song.
Yes. This is Samba Party, is it?
Stand By Me by Benny King was the one you chose.
Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. Right, okay. Well, Benny, it's a great song, great lyrics, great sentiments, and it hints at the magic and the special relationship that there is between one generation and another, and if that relationship is good and strong, then a magic occurs, which is worthy of celebration in song and music and in dance and in every other way.
Well, look, we could talk for days, I think, Dr. Hawkes, but thank you very much for coming on to Dad's on the Air. I've been hanging on every word you've said, and I can only thoroughly recommend this book, 10 Conversations You Must Have With Your Son. It's a book you must have. We can just limit it to that. So once again, thank you for being on the program, and we're now going to listen to your song selection, Stand By Me by Benny King.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me.
Now, thanks to Hachette Publishing, we have a couple of copies of the book to give away to a lucky listener. So go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email telling us where you heard the show, and we'll be in touch. If you would like to listen to the show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. And in the meantime, we look forward to your company next week when we'll have another interesting guest. So once again, thank you for Dr. Hawkes for being on the program, and this is Cheerio from Dads on the Air.